I'm off my game today.
No, you're not.
That's true.
People are going to have to start making better content.
I think we're going to be talking about this for a long time.
When you program for everyone, you program for no one.
I think it's that we're a purpose-driven platform. Like, we're trying to get to substance. How was that? Are you happy with that?
Yeah.
This is marketing therapy right now.
It really is.
What's up? I'm Laura Carenti.
And I'm Alexa Kristen. Welcome back to Adlandia. We're going away today.
Yeah. We're traveling.
We're traveling with Jen Rubio. Very high style.
But also accessible style.
I was just going to say accessible. What's going on today? So we have Jen Rubio, co-founder of Away Luggage.
And Away. In parentheses.
We talked to her about the parentheses because they are going to become, I think, much, much more than just luggage. In the studio with us today, in between flights, she had a badass Away bag.
Yeah. That camo green.
Is awesome.
And some new products coming out, it looks like. But it's been interesting. We've been obsessing over the DTC landscape for quite some time now, having a lot of fun watching sort of the cohort of founders that exist there, trading notes, comparing best practices, and actually executing on them. I think one of the things that I love that Jen talks about in this interview that is important, I think, for marketers to think about is how not just brands, but their leadership is living out the brand IRL. And I think it'll be interesting to hear how she thinks about marketing and communications and as much as collaborations and how all of those things have to reflect the platform before product.
Yeah, and she has like five titles. We were joking around with her, but she is also the chief brand officer. And in the beginning, like talking to her about like, what does that really mean? And I think, you know, there are a lot of people who are talking about how brand is more important and kind of takes a different life in DTC. And I think DTC brands are going to teach the world of marketing really how to bring brand back and make it meaningful.
They are mad woke marketers.
You're into the woke.
Yeah, it's like a thing right now.
So now we woke with Jen Rubio.
We'll be right back. So welcome back. We're in the studio with the most fabulous woman in all of travel.
And more, probably. Right. Yeah. Jen Rubio.
Yeah, rolling deep with her luggage here at the studio in Brooklyn this morning.
It's
welcome
just
to the
a prop. There's nothing in it.
So Jen is the co-founder and chief brand officer and president of Away.
Did they tell you all of that?
No.
We looked it up.
I looked it up. Is that what you go by? Do you go by chief brand officer? What are you?
No,
do you
like, I just say co-founder.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, what's a chief brand officer?
Well, so that's, we wanted to get into that. That's like, perfect. What is a chief brand officer?
I don't know. I literally don't know.
Especially for like a DTC brand. Like, what is a chief brand officer?
Well, you know, a brand is our moat. You know how many times I said that when we were seed fundraising? And how many VCs were like, I don't think so.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Okay. I think, you know what? It's... there's been a lot of talk lately about new DTC companies, like post Away, because I feel like we're phase two. Like phase one was like the Warby Parker, like Bonobos, and like Casper towards the end of that.
Totally.
And then came like our wave, like Away, Glossier.
Right.
And now there's this new wave, and I feel like there's a lot of VCs who are like, ooh, brand is a moat, DTC. And they just start funding them. But I start seeing these decks like come my way, and I'm like, what? This isn't a brand. This is the same deck that we just saw.
You actually had an awesome comment the other day on your, I was looking at your Twitter and someone said something about, you know, VCs are overfunding DTC brands. And you said, yes, brand is starting to become, like, in the minds of VCs, like, people are thinking about it as just a deck and a logo. And that is absolutely wrong.
Yeah. And I mean, our seed deck was real bad. I, like, made it in PowerPoint, like, put a bunch of bloggers on it and, like, a picture of the globe. I'm not a designer. And I was like, this is a travel brand. But I think, you know, when we were talking about it to the people who ended up investing, so, like, Forerunner and Comcast and Excel, they're like, okay, we know we're going to look past this deck. And we started talking about what the brand would really be in terms of, like, how are we going to partner with people? How is the product going to play into it? How are we going to talk about this in a way that is really a brand? And I think what a lot of people do nowadays, and like, and more power to these agencies that do it, is they'll go to an agency who's like really amazing at like at brand identity.
Yeah, and brand architecture. Mm-hmm. And like, yep.
And like, and gives you like a really good like brand Bible.
Yep.
And they're like, this is it. But then it launches, like there's not really like a community around it. Yeah. And everyone's like, oh, what happened? They had such a nice deck.
Yeah. Having sat on the agency side for the last decade, it's interesting to see the transition in terms of where agencies are filling holes for certain brands and understanding the value of community, ethos, purpose, value, all of those things, even before they land on what the purpose and the value prop is for the product.
Mm-hmm.
Away to Me is one of those brands, and where you've obviously created an innovative suitcase, but at the heart of it, sort of the community that you've built around the democratization of travel and kind of leaning into some of the things that the next generation of people is looking for in equipment to move from city to city. Can you talk about what that looked like when you were developing the brand in terms of where did you want to put the emphasis on outward facing?
I think we went into this I tell a story different every time because I'm actually not sure what came first, like the product or the brand. But I think we went to this thinking, if you're going to buy a suitcase, there aren't a lot of great options. You can spend like $1,000 on a bag and it might be cool and well-designed, but it's not like when you spend like $1,000 on a nice handbag, you're not like, oh, I love this.
Right.
Or you are spending less money, but you know it's going to break. And, you know, having come from Warby Parker and my co-founder, Steph, was at Casper at the time, we were like, okay, maybe luggage is one of those industries where we can do high-quality product, lower price point, cut out the middleman, all of that stuff. But then I think as we were looking into it, what really resonated with me more as the chief brand officer is that, like, no one was talking about travel. So you have all these, like, incumbent brands that are like, look at our ballistic nylon and look at these wheels and look at the zippers. And this is something that people take with them on every trip. People are super annoying when they talk about travel. It's like all they talk about. It's all they post pictures of. So how come no one's talking about that?
Yeah, and the art of packing and the bubble. I mean, yeah, there's, I mean, like there's a thing.
So it's like, yeah, it's like it's a true like art and lifestyle.
Yeah.
And I think if it wasn't for that opportunity, I don't know how far I personally would have gotten in this, because I'm not like super stoked about like, hey, here's like a suitcase. And you know, I love our product. Obviously, we poured like everything into designing it and making it perfect. But if there wasn't a way to like market it or talk about it in the sense of a larger brand, I don't know how far.
We got an Away suitcase and I gave it to Laura.
And
all my friends are obsessed with their Away suitcase. All of them. Obsessed.
But yeah, are they buying into like, the actual physical product, or yes, are they buying into the brand?
Yes, they are buying into the physical product. They love the brand. The brand is so much a part of the physical product to them.
It's so intertwined. And yeah, I think the way we've done it is that we went so narrow on the product in the beginning, where mm-hmm, it's like we're not going to make 10 suitcases for 10 different types of travelers. Yeah. Whatever. We're going to make... We literally went out saying this is the one perfect suitcase for everyone. And now there's like a few different versions based on what we've learned about our customers. But we went so narrow on the product. We literally launched with one product in one size and four colors. We're like, we'll see. But then we went so wide on the brand. So from the beginning, we couldn't get the domain and we still don't have it.
What is it, awaytravel.com?
It's awaytravel.com. But we had like awayluggage.com and it's like, we can't do awayluggage.com. It's like too narrow.
Yeah.
And we're just thinking about it. We always talked about ourselves as a travel brand, even though we had literally one bag. And I think that's what made the brand feel so ingrained. I was with someone the other day and I was with a group of people and someone like hadn't heard of Away, which means they probably just haven't been targeted on Instagram yet. But he was like, oh, maybe I have an Away suitcase. And someone else in the group was like, no, if you had one, you would know. Like, you don't just like have one and you're like, oh, okay. And then he was like, oh, yeah, well, I did research luggage for weeks. And I was like searching all over the place, read a ton of reviews, and I ended up buying one. And I was like, which one did you get? And he's like, oh, I don't know. And I'm like, how do you research something for 3 weeks and you don't even know what brand you end up buying?
That's a
you
great
just end
point.
Up clicking something. So, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that we are, there's so much low-hanging fruit, like, in the luggage industry.
Right.
But then for us, for it to be like, you know, we don't have experience in the luggage industry. We had to do a ton of research and, like, partner with a lot of experts to make the product really good. But, like, what we're passionate about is travel.
Yeah.
I think that's what's allowed the company and the team to grow so quickly.
The discovery thing is interesting because the amount of times, like, especially as somebody coming in, and I haven't been married yet, so I had never had a shower where I was gifted a gift set of luggage.
Yeah.
Sort of those preconceived notions of when you're supposed to get your first set.
Mm-hmm.
We went full-fledged into our corporate jobs, like all of us sitting around the table, like on the road all the time. The amount of pieces of luggage that I've gone through over the course of my career is nuts.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, like the discovery process was always like, I was in Home Goods or TJ Maxx, or like my mother's like, here's an extra carry-on, or like,
it's always, you know, when you go home.
My mom, always gives it to you. Yeah. What is that?
It's like, she's crazy. Like, she goes into the basement.
And my mother, God bless her,
buys like a set and gives my husband and I like the big one. She's like, now that we've had a kid, she's like, here, take the
big
one.
But those are all, I feel like, traditional ways of passing down this thing that you needed when people didn't used to travel at the capacity or rate that I'm sure some of us are. And I think it's interesting, just as you're talking through it and like the discovery of this guy and going through this research, you changed the way I think our generation thought about buying this thing.
In that they actually do think about it now. It's not even people who travel a ton who think about it, because I was traveling when I worked at All Saints. I was traveling like to all of our stores all over the world, like 200,000 miles a year, and I still had, I don't even know what brand of luggage. Like, I just had it. Like, my mom gave it to me.
Right.
And it was, like, literally the last thing I thought about. And I think people are now seeing it as part of, they're like, I'm literally carrying this thing with me around the world. It's time to think about it.
It's like, what car are you getting in? You know, like, what's the identity that you're moving with?
Yeah, it is an identity thing.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. I mean, like, you wouldn't buy a car and be like, oh, I don't know what kind of car I have.
Yeah. I researched it for 3 weeks, and I'm not sure where I landed. Just,
we gotta call that guy after the show.
We can love it. So you were speaking at Social Media Week yesterday. You were keynoting.
A lot of tweets.
And I think a lot of people have been asking this question, like, is Away more than suitcases? And we know, yes, it definitely is. But I would love for you to kind of talk about, where is Away going? And also, is it easier for a brand like Away, DTC, to actually quickly move into other areas in an industry?
So I think we are uniquely positioned because, I mean, travel's so broad and so easy. And it's so fun, right? I think there's a lot of things like, you know, Casper wants to be like a sleep brand. They're not a mattress brand.
A wellness brand. They're
a wellness. Like,
yeah, I mean, they're starting to get into that.
There's so many directions.
Yeah.
But inherently, like, people don't talk about sleep that much, or maybe they
except
do.
When
Ariana
they walk
Huffington
into
it,
yeah,
except,
yeah, right, Ariana, no, but, does, so there's like there's a whole like movement around that,
right?
But travel was such an easy thing to plug into,
yeah.
So I do think that we can attribute a lot of like the excitement around it to that, and like travel and Instagram and all these things that just like marry
and Airbnb.
Together.
I mean, the industry of travel has changed.
I think for us, again, because we went so wide with the brand and people. We're like, okay, here's like a cool travel brand. Oh, they only make one thing. I'll buy it. But I think through a lot of the things we've done, like the marketing, like the way we do social media, like the events we do in our store, all of that stuff, people are like, oh, this is inherently like a travel brand. So it's not weird when we, like what we did last year, we went to Paris Fashion Week and did a pop-up hotel. People are like, oh, Away is doing a hotel.
Yeah,
that
makes sense.
If we did something with an airline, people are
right.
Oh, that makes sense. I would get on that plane. So I think just the way we talk about travel has allowed all of those doors to kind of be open to us.
Yeah.
And when we do want to go into other things, like when we did a magazine.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are doing
so you do quarterly.
Now.
Yeah. So does Casper.
Yep. Like a quarterly print magazine. But people are like, okay, there's a bunch of travel magazines out there. They don't really appeal to me, but like I like Away as a brand, so I'm going to read what they have to say.
Right.
And the magazine's been doing really well. There's like the ad revenue has been great. Like it reaches a really targeted group of, because it goes in every suitcase, so it reaches a really targeted group of people that you know are about to travel. So, and the content's great because that's not our main business. So we're like, let's just talk about whatever we want.
Yeah, let's talk about what we think is cool.
I mean,
at the end of the day,
it ends up appealing to people.
Yeah, in a way, representing an idea,
mm-hmm.
I think is really interesting. That, and you know, broader than just luggage or a product. Or
mm-hmm. We have a couple editors. They're all from Condé. We have a lot of our contributors have
travel and
like
leisure.
Amazing bylines.
Travel and leisure, yeah.
No, actually, we didn't go to any of the travel magazines, but we have just have like amazing writers who work for other big magazines but never get to talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
So we're like a little retreat for them.
Yeah.
When we launched that, we were like, okay, at its worst, we have a really cool editorial site And at its best, this could be its own business. But since that was not the goal from the beginning, we could focus on the content that we wanted to put out. And I think that's the same thing. Like, it's really great. If we look at Away as a travel brand, but our core monetization strategy is selling luggage, it's really a platform to do so many other things. So we can, you know, we're not going to go buy a ton of real estate and open a bunch of hotels, but like, what do we know about the experience and the brand and what people want to do that could make a really great hotel experience? And who do we partner with to do that? And because people love the brand, it's not weird for them to stay there.
Yep. Like, who doesn't have, if you don't have Wanderlust, you're missing a chip.
Right.
In my opinion. Right. Yeah,
exactly. And I think everyone has their own way of traveling, which we recognize. We haven't been like, we're for business travelers or we're for like super luxury travelers.
Right.
We know everyone. I know like even one person has a few different ways of traveling. You know, like how I travel when I go to see my boyfriend versus like when I'm traveling for work. It's totally different.
Totally different. Yep.
Yeah, I was going to say earlier, and you both hit on it, this idea that what you built and what I think a lot of your cohort in the DTC space, you talked about Glossier and Casper and this whole family of brands, is that you all are creating platforms before you're thinking about product. Mm-hmm. Product just happens to be one tenant of this larger platform. So it's giving you the space to kind of go in and say content stands up next, or, you know, who knows, you might move into a completely different line of things within that category, which is what we're getting to. How much is your community informing that, right? So, you know, we've seen, you know, messaging that you've put out where like the pink suitcase is backed by popular demand. You went and partnered with Carly Kloss to create this partnership around, you know, her initiative with Code with Klossy. How much is the community informing what those pillars become, and how are you evolving the product as a result?
I mean, they're informing everything. So I think we kind of, it was really hard for me in the beginning. I'm like a big know-it-all. And I was like, no, this is what they want. And it was actually like such a blessing. My co-founder was in business school and she was like really into focus groups and like research and surveys. and then we'd get the results and I'd be like, oh, huh, that's weird. But that's they do inform everything, because I really think, you know, I think when people think DTC, they're like, okay, the advantage is in you're cutting out the wholesale markup. And it's like the product price advantage.
And you're getting the data.
Yeah. The real advantage that people don't think about is like that feedback loop. Yep. So if we sold our luggage in department stores, we would just get a report like monthly, quarterly, whatever, saying here's what sold, here's what didn't sell, you're getting it back, here's the return rate, if that.
Yeah.
And you have no idea why. Anytime someone returns or exchanges a suitcase, we know exactly why. Like there are things we can work on. How would we have known that? You know, maybe the straps inside the bag could have been like an inch longer. But people tell us that. And I think also because we started putting it into practice really early, people see things like, okay, we did a limited edition of the pink. They wanted it. So we made it. So now people are like, oh, they listen. So they give us even more
feedback.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think the problem that we have, which is a great problem to have, is like there's so much feedback to go through and there's so much data to analyze. And how do you make sure that, okay, if you have like two cohorts of customers who want different things, like how do you do it? So now we're in that phase of how to listen. But I think because from the beginning, we've always listened to people. And that's how we designed the product. Like when we were like, okay, if we're only going to make one bag, we can't screw this up.
Yeah.
So we interviewed hundreds of people about like the weirdest things. Like we would like watch people pack because people are really bad at describing that. But that's how we designed our first product. And so that's like inherently been part of our model. Like, listen, I think it's cool to be like a direct-to-consumer entrepreneur right now.
Sure.
And I think the people who are going into it being like, okay, I'm going to start a Warby Parker for whatever, they don't think about the feedback loop. They don't think about all of the other things that actually are what makes a direct-to-consumer brand. Because you don't become a direct-to-consumer brand because, like, distribution is easy.
That's right.
There were so many opportunities in the beginning and still now where we're like, if we turn this on or if we partner with this or if we just sell wholesale with this partner and they're, like, they're good partners, that's an easy $10, $20, $30 million on
top. Cash out.
But you have to have a long-term view of, like, your customer relationship and your community and all of that stuff. And I think a lot of people right now are starting brands and then they get approached by, you know, like a traditional retailer, like a big name department store. And it's like very easy to want to say yes to that, but you don't think about what you're giving up in the long term.
Yeah. What's the most surprising feedback you've gotten in your loops?
Oh, God. What's been surprising is how particular people are in giving their feedback. Mm. And I'm like, I'm like a lazy survey taker.
I am
I, like,
too.
Do all the things. Yeah. I never put any comments. We get like essays really? Of stuff. And I think it goes back to like we're sitting around in the office like, okay, what do we do with this? You know, like yeah. how do we actually synthesize this? But it's been amazing. The all these people, I bet, were really good like test takers because the detail in these essays is incredible.
So you were talking about kind of like parsing out the feedback and the data. We don't talk about data a lot, especially with chief brand officers, co-founders, entrepreneurs.
Presidents.
Do you guys have like a little kick-ass group of analysts and data scientists that
yeah,
are...
Yeah, they're all so much smarter than me. I'm like, this is cool. Can I get a summary?
TLDR, please.
Low, Tableau. Yeah.
Like, I'm going to leave this Slack channel and you can just tell me yeah. what
Take
happened
a picture
in
the
summary.
Yeah.
We actually have a data team. We have an insights team. And what we've been tried to be really good about is that they don't operate on their own. They're not just like looking at numbers and like looking at feedback. Yeah. Basically, everyone is super involved in the feedback. So even like our customer experience team, they get tons of emails like from all these customers who are now their best friends. They like funnel that in all of the right places. So anytime a customer says something about the product, like it goes right to the product team. Mm. So it doesn't feel like there's clusters of people who just look at the data and that's it. That's what a lot of people get hung up on doing. Like they're collecting data, they're collecting insights, and then nothing ever happens.
Right. What's the value? What's the context?
And that's like an organizational issue as well as like just a mindset issue, right? Like mm-hmm. it's like how you staff, but it's also about creating those pipelines and saying that there's a little bit, this should be three-dimensional.
Yeah. It can't just be like a pool of data. Yeah.
And data is commodity, right? Like the data sets that you're getting consequentially, like based on credit card data, in-store data, like everybody has at some point similar sets.
Yeah. So, and let's be real, like the bigger companies are doing a much better job collecting that stuff.
Yeah. But the problem is they don't know how to act on it.
Right. They don't know what to do with it.
They don't know what to do with it.
So we actually probably have less data right now and like less sophisticated ways of looking at it. But the thing that makes the most difference is that it goes to the teams that can do stuff about it. Yeah. So like now we have our product design teams designing stuff for next year. And they're like, when we like piloted this bag with a group of people, here's like all the stuff they said. And they actually incorporate that in there. So we have some of the most data minded like
designers
and creatives, which before Away, they're like, I didn't know this existed. How did you get this info?
Do you think that's a theme like that's coming in the industry more, that we're going to be able to have like the creative side and the kind of more scientific side like working together for marketing, and that's going to drive
or
some
product.
Of the stuff or product? Well,
I hope so. I mean, I think a lot of why it is the way it is because of my relationship with my co-founder. I mean, I can't remember which one is which, but left brain, right brain, whatever. We're so each other's opposites. And in the beginning, it was really easy because there was all these things that we had to do. And it was very clear who had to do which thing.
Yeah.
And we weren't trying to land grab anything. And I think, obviously, I know stuff, maybe not obviously, but I do know stuff about the business. And she does know stuff about the brand. But because we kind of like let each other
naturally go into that,
naturally go into it. Like we just got to be really good at it. And what we've done is like build out teams. You know, we started out just the two of us. Now there's like 150 people, but we've like built out teams that kind of reflect that. And because we work so closely together, they all have to work so closely together. Even the way we structure marketing is a little bit different. So we have a VP of growth marketing who's like paid acquisition, retention, all that stuff. And then we have a VP of brand marketing. Mm. So we don't have one CMO, but even like everyone on our acquisition team is like, we're looking at these like acquisition costs and they would be way higher if it wasn't for all the stuff that the brand marketing team is doing.
Yeah.
And all the brand marketing team does really cool stuff, but it has to get amplified somehow. So I think we've kind of really taken that like art and science approach to everything at Away. Like the brand marketing team and the creative teams like have to look at how their stuff perform, like they think about ROI. So it's like we've definitely had to like train people and like create the frameworks for them to think about it that way. But I think that's what's like allowed us to do this.
I think DTC is actually going to teach the industry this, like even how to organize in a different way.
It makes it really hard for hiring, though, I will say.
It does make it really hard for hiring.
Because you look at, maybe you want to bring in like industry veterans with more experience to help guide a lot of the kind of early like young, super hungry, like ambitious people we've hired. But then it's like they don't know how to work within the structure. Yeah. So
that's like a common theme in the industry, like, I think, at large right now, that like people have been trained on these traditional models and then they get in these startup environments where the ethos has flipped from transaction to more value exchange in the sense of like content and creation and development and making. Mm-hmm. And like those things don't necessarily always translate.
And they're on equal levels now.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that's
so there's a big gap. I think there's people who've kind of grown up and like climbed the ladders and like worked in a lot of different startups. And there's people like traditional marketers who are experienced with like bigger budgets and more platforms and kind of, I mean, you don't want to throw away all of like traditional marketing.
No, not at all.
You have to know how to do that. But then there's a gap of like, okay, so how do startups find really senior people who understand the way startups work, but also, but can like bring that team into moving into bigger budgets.
We talk a lot about like the unicorn effect of like those people who have the traditional chops, have been in the industry and where they understand how to pull the levers on that channel mix, but have the guts and the creativity and the flexibility to challenge the way that model existed, right? So mm-hmm. they know how to manipulate media in a way in which it can then translate for the next
and business.
Consumer.
And they're thinking about business in a different way.
I think you'll start to see a lot of these direct-to-consumer brands as we all grow, as we spend more and more money on marketing. I mean, we still work in a really lean and scrappy way, but like the budgets are getting bigger. We need to reach more people. What's going to happen is not that we take people used to those budgets and to those media mixes and like bring them into our organization. It's like our team's trying to figure out how to do that stuff for the first time.
Yeah, you're going to grow. I mean, you're going to grow. You're going to grow your people.
Yeah, exactly.
Into that.
Exactly. Yeah.
So a lot of people talk about the DTC space, and as two co-hosts on a podcast, we can attest to this. You know, DTC was fast and furious in the podcast space early on. It was like the longstanding joke, like if you don't sleep
the
on a Casper,
black.
Use in a way, mm-hmm. you know, brush your teeth with a Quip, like you haven't listened to a podcast.
Yeah, DTC is basically, basically
subsidized by
podcast industry. Yeah.
So, but it's interesting in that you guys were figuring out how to be scrappy, but there was also this loyal listener base there that was willing to convert. Was that a benounced thing in sort of the early bets that you placed with your, I'm assuming, scrappy startup marketing budget? Or was it a proxy of just like efficiency? Like how were you plotting your marketing plan? You're 2 years old out of the gate and now you're
God, I can't believe you guys
out
are
on
two
Broadway
years old.
With this like insane billboard, you know, activation. What's been the evolution of how you're thinking about your marketing budget and planning?
I think our team has done an amazing job in that they're like portfolio managers and they
this has come up over and over, by the way. This is amazing, that word. That
portfolio.
Yep.
A lot of the traditional marketers are like, you guys must spend a lot of money on Facebook and Instagram. And like, yeah, we do. But it's like, I think I live in fear of building an entire brand or business around one platform.
Yeah.
And as we've seen, like what happens when they change their algorithm? What happens when like you can't reach those people anymore? What happens when like Congress is like getting involved?
Yeah.
There's always going to be like big ways to reach a lot of people and to do it really effectively. And I don't think those will change overnight. But I think you're really like screwing yourself over if you're not thinking about other things. So from the beginning, it wasn't like, okay, here's our budget. It's not that big. Let's just throw it all into one platform. We're always experimenting. You know, as we've raised more money, as we've sold a lot more suitcases, as we want to reach more people, we want to be able to turn those things on, but without having tried them, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like one day we're going to be like, oh, we're gonna go on TV. You know, we are going to start doing like big national TV buys. But over the last year, they've been testing a lot of stuff and like remnant buys in like local markets and testing creative on there. So we're never throwing money at something without having tried it and tested it. And that was the thing with podcasts. I think in the beginning, there was a lot of like early testing, a couple podcasts here and there, figuring out what kind of podcast creative worked for us or what kinds of listeners were really into the product. And then when we were ready to make more meaningful investments in like podcast advertising, we knew how we wanted to do it. So I think even today, there's so many different things that we're trying out and not in like a huge meaningful way, but when we are ready to go into it big, it's a lot less risky for us.
Why TV? Why are you going into TV?
it's been really good for us. Mm. It's been really efficient. So Comcast is one of our early investors.
Yeah.
They have an amazing program. I'm not sure if it's just for their portfolio companies, but it's like this Accelerate program that helps brands like us get into TV. And they kind of guide you through like, here's how you make a direct response ad. And
we talked to Linda Yaccarino about this when she was on the show.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. And it's like everyone at the startup, like none of us have ever had experience in TV. But then you start testing it, you start to do smaller buys. And I think what's been really great for us is that we're not just doing like a TV buy and you're like, oh, I hope it works. But they help you a lot with attributing the commercial to sales and seeing if it's really working. And in our early tests, it's been really great. So I think we're going to go.
Every brand, every marketer just went, what?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's crazy. I couldn't even explain it to you. It'd be really embarrassing because now our data team's listening to this. They're like, she has no idea what she's talking about. I think when you're a startup and you have limited budgets, you want to make sure what you're spending money on works.
Yeah.
And I think that's why Facebook and Instagram are so great because they give you all of that data back. And it's easy to like go to your marketing manager and be like, it's working. Let's put more money into it. I don't know. We'd like to mix
There's
it up.
There's two things in that on the TV side because it's interesting. So many brands that I've encountered over the last 12 to 18 months who are early stage, we can't be on TV. We don't have enough money.
Yeah, I was just
and,
gonna
and
go
I'm always
there.
Like wrong thought because in reality, and I think you know it's interesting that Comcast is partnering in that way, and I think we're going to see more and more networks try to figure out how to partner with brands like you to set yourselves up for success of the future. Where, yeah, early days, remnant inventory, mass scale allows you to get super niche in specific environments, et cetera. But at the same time, you know, you might be able to place one big bet throughout the entire year with an insane story, an insane creative, i.e. in the Super Bowl, in, you know, some other tentpole award show throughout the year where your customer, where you might be gift bagging influencers. I don't know. But point being, it's interesting in that nobody had that experience. So your first preconceived notion at a startup is like, I can't be there because I don't have enough money.
We're not big enough.
But that's exactly it. I think if you look at, okay, well, how much money are you spending on your shitty Facebook ads all year, right?
100%.
Yes. So if you only have early days, you only have a couple hundred grand to spend, the return on like 200 grand of like of TV could be a lot bigger than 200 grand of like weird Facebook ads that you haven't tested.
Right.
So, I mean, I think just we look at everything from an ROI perspective and that's easier to analyze if you are getting data. And I think not everyone knows how to get data from all the places they're advertising.
Yeah.
But it's like, I think there's a lot of safe options for marketing. But if you're not, like, if you don't do it early on, you're never going to be ready to do it. Because it's not like one day you're going to be like, oh, I have a $30 million budget to do this. But we've never done it before. So you're going to be scared to go into TV.
But I think
I want to flip it. I want to flip it, too, to the big brands. I mean, the big brands actually, is this a case? Every CMO is going to barf. But, like, is this the case for limiting budget, proving stuff out, really, really testing? Everybody talks about test, iterate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fail, succeed, branch off and go from there.
I mean, we literally do it with everything. We do it with our retail stores. We've never signed a long lease. Every time we go, I mean, even the most obvious things, we're like, I think a store would do well in New York. We're like, okay, let's test it. So you sign a short-term lease and you figure out if it works. You figure out how big it needs to be. We have a flagship store now on Lafayette and Bond, but we started with a little store on Houston and Lafayette. There was like 600 square feet. We're like too small. We figure out why people were shopping for the bags. And then we did a bigger store in Soho. And we're like, we don't need to be in Soho because we figured out we were like a destination. So by the time we are signing a long-term lease and doing a bigger build out, we know. And
yeah,
we're
you
not
know.
Just guessing. And we haven't signed a 10-year lease and like thrown like $2 million down the drain.
Right.
I think the way big brands think about it, they're like, oh, we're going to test and iterate. But their tests cost
$10 million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that's not really, but
$1 million.
But I think there's a fundamental difference between return on investment versus return on insight. Because what you were just talking about in terms of figuring out why people are navigating to the store in a certain way, why the location and the context of that environment is going to move a certain volume of sales. Some of the bigger guys you see, they're just looking at the price and the margin. Mm-hmm. And thinking about the rate and where can I squeeze the most money to reach this mass people, as opposed to saying, what is the context and the story that I'm telling and what is that lifetime value then that I'm extracting from a consumer.
I don't know if enough people are measured on the lifetime value. And I think that is one of the great things about DTC companies being venture-backed is that all VCs that want to talk about is lifetime value.
Everyone wants
an acquisition cost. That's all they want to talk about.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think there's a lot of things wrong with that. One of the great things is that all of these DTC marketing teams look at that and they have a longer-term view of these things versus CMOs who are like, of public companies who are trying to get their quarterly numbers up.
Yes, so there's a volume.
That's right.
Yeah. And it's like they don't care about LTV because they're not going to be even at that company in a few years.
Nope. That's
a whole nother show.
It's a whole nother freaking show. Tell us about how you guys think about partnerships because you've done some really interesting partnerships. You started with like the NBA is like one of the mm-hmm. big, and I was like actually shocked that Away did something with the NBA. Can you like kind of talk about like what led you into the kinds of partnerships you've done?
The data and growth marketing team is like breathing a sigh of relief. They're like, okay, I can stop talking about this. So partnerships has been a huge part of what we've done. This was one of the things that when we were first raising money, we talked about partnerships a lot as part of like building the brand. And everyone was like, huh?
No.
But where's the logo? Mm. And we're like, okay, God.
On the deck.
Yeah.
Next to the globe.
It's on the deck.
next to the clip art.
But we talked about partnerships a lot. We talked about that's what it's going to make this a lifestyle brand because it's like, okay, like it's your luggage, but everyone travels. There's so many people who can talk about it. And we've really tried to capitalize on that. So I think one of the things I'm really proud of that the brand has been able to do is like we've partnered with people from the NBA to Karlie Kloss to the Minions to like Rashida Jones.
Oh, I love
Jones.
The Minions bag.
But it's just like all different people that we're reaching. So even when we were thinking about creating the product, we were like, how do we make this a platform for collabs and for working with other brands? The suitcase lends itself really well to that because you can change the color, change the lining, do a lot of fun stuff with the packaging.
Change the destination.
Yeah, and we can and like for campaigns, it's really easy. So, I mean, we just see Away as a platform for doing a lot of this.
So I was just going to say that. I mean, at the end of the day, when you were talking about not investing in any platform, you are.
Yeah, we are the platform. Yeah. And I think that for us, partnerships goes beyond product collaborations now. So, for example, for the NBA, if I'm remembering correctly, they reached out to us about doing something. We timed it with All-Star Weekend. We took our product and we said, how can we change this product in a way that like can speak to that audience? And it's the texture of a basketball. Have you guys seen it in real life?
Yeah.
So it's a texture of a basketball. And all of my friends who are into sports were like, oh, it's a basketball. Cool. And all of my like fashion friends were like, oh, I love this pebbled leather. I'm like, oh, my God. It's like, it's not pebbled leather, but okay.
That's awesome.
But I think what we've been able to do is like, what the partnerships have enabled us to do is really look at this as more of an accessory. So we have people who will buy multiple suitcases of the same size. They must not live in New York.
Like individuals.
Yeah, where are they storing them?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, we have customers who have like 3 or 4 carry-ons because they see the collabs and they're like, oh, wait, that's really cool. And it's limited edition. I want to be a part of that. That's been awesome for our brand, I think, is we are going to continue doing more partnerships. And I think the way we look is everyone travels, but, you know, how do we reach travelers in the music industry or travelers in the – literally can't come up with another industry right now. And then we look at what brands and people are really relevant in that space, and then we do something with them.
You know, it's interesting, you know, thinking about the idea of a destination, and obviously you serve a utility, but I'm interested in where you can move into it as a service, right? So, like, I would love for Jen Rubio and Co. to come and, like, pack my suitcase. I would love for you to kind
Wouldn't you?
You do have fabulous style. But also just, you know, as you think about the platform, does the suitcase just then become the shell for what is inside it and where it goes? And then does that completely broaden that platform in terms of what those collaborations could be or products that you develop?
In the early days when we were starting out, there were smart luggage brands that were like had an app that could like tell you what to do, but it's like
it could track your bag.
Could track your bag, you could do all this stuff. And in the long term, if you think about it, if that had worked and people cared enough about this brand to find out what their app was going to say about where they were going, like it could have been really cool. But they're like, no one really cared what those brands had to say about their travel destinations because they were inherently just making like Kickstarter products.
Right.
It's funny because we've totally shied away from that and we were adamant that we didn't want to make an app. We didn't want to make all these platforms that were unnecessary. But now we have the brand where if we did do that, people would be like,
now they use it. And again, it would be like, yeah, that makes sense.
But we didn't lead with that. But now, like, we've kind of set ourselves up to be able to do that. I'm not saying we're going to. Like, that's not in the roadmap right now.
Sure.
But I think what's been interesting is because of the way we talk about it, because of the campaigns that we shoot, we have people calling, like, our customer service number and being like, oh, we saw you did, like, a photo shoot, like, in Panama. Where should I stay? Like, what hotel was that? And we're like, that's so weird.
Yep.
And our team's amazing. They're like, we'll call you right back.
Yeah.
Or people will just call and ask for recommendations, like, everywhere they see that we post. And I think it is that community, and, like, they do trust us to pack a certain way or to experience destinations a certain way that lets us kind of explore the experience and the service side of it. So
you guys should totally partner with Andrew Steinthal and get TexRex.
I want to do like a TexRex for travel.
You TexRex, baby. I want to talk about where do partnerships lead, as something that we've talked a lot about and we're kind of obsessed with, is like when you start putting IP together, right? When you start kind of like, this is like GMO, right? Of brands, basically, mm-hmm. like splicing brands together and creating something new. Brands and products. I mean, are you guys exploring going a lot deeper in the kind of definition of partnership for Away?
Yeah. And so we actually haven't even touched that yet. What we've done is we have a product that's a platform from other things, and I hate the word leverage, but we leverage other people's audiences and their tastes to like affect our product. But we haven't even touched like what happens when Away and another brand like create a new product together.
Yeah.
What happens when we take like our travel expertise and experience in our community and apply that to someone else's product? Like we haven't done that. It's just been about changing Away product and a lot of times like the way it looks and telling a story around the person we're partnering with. So I think we're just like at the tip of the iceberg with that stuff. But now that people want more from us, like is it you know, like we have people all the time going to our stores saying, okay, well, I'm traveling on this trip. I also need like a great pair of like noise canceling headphones.
Or like, what do I wear? Yeah, that or what looks do I cute? Wear? Yeah. I would follow in a minute if you told me, Alexa, this is cute, comfy. You should be wearing
this. This is what you wear on the plane.
This is your plane outfit.
Yeah.
There's like pride in plane outfits, by the way.
Yeah. And
like,
it's not down
to a science. You don't have pride in plane outfit?
I go with hoodie. Leggings
and
a hoodie.
You look adorable. You could hop out, get
a
great
pink
lunch.
Pink pants, everyone.
Pink pants.
You know, it's interesting because you were talking about like the community of DTC and how you're leveraging each other's audiences. If we could just pivot for a second, because I think as a founder, one of the things that I've always admired and I'm fascinated about you and Emily Weiss at Glossier and Whitney over at Bumble is the accessibility and willingness to let people into the world as you're experiencing it with your brands and your products in real time.
And your personal. I mean, you also like you're out there at Jennifer.
Yeah. It keeps me sane though.
Does it?
Like it's such like an old millennial thing to say, like just like being authentic. But it is sometimes when I'm going crazy and I'm like, I've been on like 50 flights this year and I'm like, you know what? This is like, I need to stop complaining. And like, this is like what I love and what I want to do. And I think people are really like, we're all like everyone you mentioned, we're all living our brands. Like we are, you know, like Whitney is Bumble.
She is.
Like
yeah.
Emily is Glossier. Like we all really believe in what we're talking about and what we're selling. And I think people can tell, you know.
And have become influencers in your own right in those specific industries. And then I think also representative
of
please
send me free stuff.
But I think also representative of a genre of the next wave of brand. And like if as you're talking, I'm trying to go through some of the mega conglomerate portfolio brands and like I can't pinpoint who the executive is and B can't think about like how they're living out that brand.
It's like Lee Iacocca.
If you think about like even Mike Dubin from Dollar Shave Club, like he put himself out there, like it wasn't on social media, but he did that video and and people were like, oh, he's behind this.
Yeah.
But because it is trendy now, there is a wave of brands of like people selling stuff that they don't care about.
Believe in. But I think those things will weed themselves out.
Yeah,
they will.
And they will. Yeah. And it's like, they're almost like following a playbook and there's a portfolio. And I do think in the long run,
they won't last.
They won't last.
That's what the VCs, though. I mean, at the end of the day, right? Like anyone who's funding you guys is looking at what is the DNA and the personality of the founders.
The smart VCs. Mm. I think a lot of them are also just looking at what's the LTV and what are the margins and how much is going to cost to acquire people? I can't tell you how many VCs were like not down for away because they're like the purchase frequency is low.
And
meanwhile, like, you've got people buying four carry-ons.
On one hand, we have people buying four carry-ons, but also it's like, okay, who cares if the purchase frequency is low because we're building a bigger brand.
That's right.
Which will have more products and services. Yeah. Like, stay tuned.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, where are you
at
now?
But it was such a short-term way of thinking. So. Yeah.
It's interesting.
Should we?
Yeah.
All right, now this time, our game. Jen Rubio, what would you kill?
Meetings.
Yeah.
I know.
I read that you were doing a lot of walking meetings.
Even that. No, I think there are some things that are very necessary that, like, you need to see in person. I would say, like, 90% of meetings are unnecessary. We're big Slack users.
Slack.
I think, like, it also helps people, like, be more concise and give more context and be really thorough. Also, how come when people schedule a 30-minute meeting, they think it has to be the full 30 minutes?
Oh, that's a whole nother
thing. Sometimes it's over in 10 minutes, and they're like, okay, what else should we talk about? I'm like, nothing.
It's over. Yeah, it's done. Totally. So what are you buying?
Oh, God, what am I not buying? Let me tell you about this product. Slip, they make eye masks and silk pillowcases, which is like, sounds really bougie, but good for the hair. It is amazing. And it's kind of embarrassing.
Because it's soft?
Yeah, it's soft. It's good. It's just
Slip, like just S-L-I-P?
Yeah, I love them.
Do they like cool your eyes down and de-puff and stuff?
Oh, they're just nice. Like they're not too tight. So
that's
big. You get off the
plane. Do you travel with them?
Yeah, they're in my bag right now. I literally travel with a silk pillowcase. And when I get to a hotel, I also read this really disgusting article on mites and things like that. So anyway, I have my own pillowcase.
That's smart.
I have to get this.
It's the little luxuries, you guys. But I found out about them because we sell them at the Away store. And we're always sold out and people are always asking about them. And I was like, wait, what is this?
What is this slip?
Well, you know where I'm going after this.
And what would you do yourself, not Away? Like, do you ever say, if I was away from Away?
If you were out of office.
Yeah.
What am I doing?
Well, this is Away related, but I take a lot of pride in the fact that we don't use, like, agencies. We do everything internally. And I want to, like, fully extend that, like, vertically integrate that, if you will. But, I mean, I wish we could make our own, like, furniture and fixtures for stores. I think there's just so many inefficiencies in, like, the creative stuff.
Sure.
And, I think one of the big things was that we didn't work with an agency in the beginning to do our branding. And I saw like how well that worked out for us because it's like part of our DNA. So I want to do that with everything now.
So like all like industrial design, like create your own lamps, create your own fixtures.
Oh, storefront, everything.
I so see that for you guys.
Yeah, it'd be amazing. Like just a massive, I mean, we just signed a lease on a big new office. And, like, we're going to have, like, our own photo studio and maybe our own podcast room.
Everybody's doing it.
Everyone's doing it.
Yeah.
But we have a very DIY spirit.
Yeah.
By the way.
Well, don't ever lose it. So as a woman on a mission, last question, 2 years into a super successful DTC brand, what is your advice, not just to entrepreneurs, but particularly to women?
I think you have to really want to do it. And I know that sounds so trite. I'm seeing so many, because we get a lot of, like requests for advice meetings and people who are starting their own thing or investors who are sending companies our way just to get our thoughts on it. And it is so evident in so much of what I see that like people are doing this because they looked at like they did some competitive analysis and they saw a space in the market and they don't give a shit about it.
Yeah.
Like if we didn't really love this, it would not be good.
What's one brand that you're so hot on, other than like Slip? Like from a brand, from a brand standpoint, where you're like, "Fuck, they're cool."
Wait, can I tell you? This is like the lamest answer because it's so obvious, but I can't tell you how much like Nike continues to impress me, and this is why. Because if you like, you have a Louis Vuitton over there, and like splurge on it, you're like, "Love this bag, use all the time." If you walked on the subway and every single person had that bag, you'd be like, oh, fuck. Like, it's like not as special.
Yeah.
Nike is one of those brands that like has withstood the test of time. If every single person in this building had Nikes, you wouldn't think they were less cool. You'd be like, oh, cool, everyone has Nikes. And I think they can partner with like really high fashion, like kind of more mass, and they're still cool. I think it's like, it is so hard to be like a mass market.
So hard.
But cool brand.
Yeah.
And I think they've done it. I mean, I think that's what I want for Away.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. Hopefully you're on your way.
Yeah, that's because we really
no pun intended.
But yeah. I think it's like it's easy to be cool when you're like luxury and expensive and exclusive. It's like how do you stay cool when everyone has it?
Yeah, that's right.
Well,
that's
with
awesome.
That, we're going to drop the mic.
How do people get in touch with you or listen to you or outside of our podcast or chat with you?
At Jennifer.
Yep. Jen Rubio, if you don't have an Away bag, get one. I need one. Thank you so much for being here.
Bye, guys.
Thank you.
Big thanks to Jen Rubio. She came here in between her like crazy travel.
Yeah, she's off for a European tour.
She's already done 50 flights, she said, in already this year.
But I loved her insight on the way out. How do you find calm in the crazy? And she does not go on Wi-Fi while in flight.
I actually think it's actually one of the smartest things to do. I'm always like the
broken.
Crazy person, like typing and like IMing people, IMing.
It's like when you used to have a beeper and there was no payphone. Big thanks to our friends and family at Panoply.
Laura Morris, our badass female producer.
And we can't not thank Andy Bowers and Matt Turk.
All of our friends and family out there working it in Adlandia.
Full disclosure, our opinions are our own.